ways you might avoid your feelings. In your silence, stop holding them off with words or reasons or busyness. Simply be ashore and let your feelings wash against you like waves. March 27th. We are born singing. Song is not a luxury, but a necessary way of being in the world. Somehow we've been fooled into thinking that song is entertainment, something we can do without, like dessert. But to give voice to what lives inside is what keeps all things possible. In truth, the minute we arrive, we are born singing, though this is often mistaken for crying. Yet without this deep reflex, the lungs won't work, and the lifelong exchange between inner and outer can't begin. I remember my first day alone at home after my rib surgery. For the first time in months, everything was still, the morning light now filling the space where my rib used to be. Suddenly, finally, I began to weep, loudly, as pockets of fear and pain and exhaustion escaped. This release was a song, and what I hadn't realized was that once released, once the buildup of my journey was given a way out, life with its thousand energies and softnesses could come in. Such a simple secret. By letting things out, we also let things in. So if you're cut off, in pain, estranged, numb, sing. Give voice to anything. It needn't sound pretty. Simply, bravely, open despite the difficulty, and let what is in out and what is out in. Sing, and your life will continue. For your meditation, center yourself and locate one pocket of pain or fear or exhaustion that is building inside you. Breathe your way into that pocket. Inhale into the buildup. Exhale, letting what's in there make its way into the world. Realize that your breath is the passageway that connects your inner buildup with the air of the world. Realize that the sound of your breath is the quietest of songs. March 28th, The Gift of Shedding. From the beginning, the key to renewal has been the casting off of old skin. It's interesting that the earliest peoples believed in something that we, in our modern hive of manufacturing, have forgotten, that immortality is attainable by shedding. The Dusun of North Borneo have believed for centuries that when God finished creating the world, he announced that whoever is able to cast off his skin shall not die. But what does this mean? Not that we can live forever, but that the way to stay closest to the pulse of life, the way to stay in the presence of that divine reality which informs everything, is to be willing to change. Still, change what? To change whatever has ceased to function within us. To shed whatever we are carrying that is no longer alive. To cast off our dead skin because dead skin can't feel, dead eyes can't see, dead ears can't hear. And without feeling, there is no chance of wholeness. And wholeness remains our best chance to survive the pain of breaking. Of course, for human beings, dead skin takes many forms, the most significant of which remain intangible but suffocating, such as a dead way of thinking, a dead way of seeing, a dead way of relating, a dead way of believing, or a dead way of experiencing. In essence, shedding opens us to self-transformation. Paradoxically, those of us who refuse such renewal will, sooner or later, be forced to undergo transformation anyway, as a result of being broken or eroded by the world. Very often both occur at the same time. That is, we shed from within, while being eroded from without. For your meditation, center yourself and meditate on what you are carrying that is dead skin for you. Breathe cleanly and deeply, and ask yourself, what are you being called to shed, to put to rest, in order to gain greater access to the hidden wholeness of life? March 29th. What keeps us from shedding? Often we give up our right to renewal to accommodate the anxiety of those around us. For sure, living is not easy, and living openly is both wondrous and dangerous. The fact is that shedding, no matter how useful or inevitable, always has a pain of its own. Unfortunately, there is no escaping this underside of growth. So it's not surprising that there are many feelings peculiar to human beings that prevent us from shedding what has ceased to work, including fear, pride, nostalgia, a comfort in the familiar, and a want to please those we love. Often we give up our right to renewal to accommodate the anxiety of those around us. The Melanesians of the New Hebrides contend that this is how we lost our immortality. Sir James Frazer has preserved their story. It seems at first human beings never died, but cast their skins like snakes and crabs and came out with youth renewed. But after a time, a woman growing old went to a stream to change her skin. According to some, she was Ulta Marama, change skin of the world. She threw her old skin in the water and observed that as it floated, it caught on a stick. Then she went home, where she had left her child. But the child refused to recognize her, crying that its mother was an old woman, not this young stranger. So to pacify the child, she went after her old skin and put it back on. From that time, human beings ceased to cast their skins and died. And so, when we cease to shed what's dead in us in order to soothe the fear of others, we remain partial. When we cease to surface our most sensitive skin simply to avoid conflict with others, we remove ourselves from all that is true. When we maintain ways we've already discarded just to placate the ignorance of those we love, we lose our access to what is eternal. For your meditation, sit quietly and ask yourself, what voices are asking you to keep your old skin and not to change? Center yourself and ask, what is the cost to you for not renewing your connection with all that is eternal? March 30th. The energy of being real. Do not seek any rules or method of worship. Say whatever your pained heart chooses. Rumi. Mana is a term originally used in Polynesian and Melanesian cultures to describe an extraordinary power or force residing in a person or an object, a sort of spiritual electricity that charges anyone who touches it. Carl Jung later defined the term as the unconscious influence of one being on another. What Jung speaks to is the fact that the energy of being real has more power than outright persuasion, debate, or force of will. He suggests that being who we are always releases an extraordinary power that, without intent or design, affects the people who come in contact with such realness. The beautiful and simple truth of this can be seen in looking at the sun. The sun, without intent or will or plan or sense of principle, just shines thoroughly and constantly. By being itself, the sun warms with its light, never withholding or warming only certain things of the earth. Rather, The sun emanates in all directions all the time, and things grow. In the same way, when we are authentic, expressing our warmth and light in all directions, we cause things around us to grow. When our souls, like little suns, express the light of who we are, we emanate what Jesus called love and what Buddha called compassion, and the roots of community lengthen. In this way, without any intent to shape others, we simply have to be authentic, and a sense of mana, of spiritual light and warmth, will emanate from our very souls, causing others to grow, not toward us, but toward the light that moves through us. In this way, by being who we are, we not only experience life in all its vitality, but quite innocently and without design, we help others be more thoroughly themselves. In being real, in staying devoted to this energy of realness, we help each other grow toward the one vital light. For your meditation, center yourself and let the stream of your feelings move through. After a time, give direct voice to the particular feelings as they rise, saying simply on each out-breath whatever moves through you: sadness, fear, confusion, peace, boredom, joy. After a time, let the stream of feelings continue to rise as you return to breathing in silence. Now feel the very things about you: rug, chair, window, wall. Feel them lean in your direction. March 31st. The practice of being real. As the sun cannot withhold its light, we cannot withhold what feels real. As the earth keeps going by turning itself toward the light day after day, we have no choice, despite all forms of etiquette and training, but to keep turning toward what we feel is real. Otherwise, we become cold little planets spinning in the dark. Very often, when I'm confused or depressed for a long period of time, it's because I have stopped turning toward the light of what feels real. At times like this, I have to break the darkness of my spinning with a very small and simple step that often seems huge and difficult because I have been spinning in on myself. I have to practice being real by saying what I feel, not just once, but continually. I've struggled my whole life with this. Like most of us, I learned to survive by withholding what feels real. When events happen, when someone says or does something that hurts me, I've learned to absorb the hit and pretend that nothing has changed, that everything is the same. But when I do this, my energy is used up in maintaining the pretense that nothing has happened, and I begin to spin coldly in the dark. It's so simple and yet so brave to say that we are hurt when we are hurt, that we are sad when we are sad, that we are scared when we are scared. In very direct and daily ways, this energy of realness, this mana, changes situations because the immediate expression of our truth releases light and warmth that influences the life we are a part of. This is the way our spirit shines. For your meditation, center yourself and once again let the stream of your feelings move through. After a time, give direct voice to the particular feelings as they rise. Be careful this time to voice your feelings as yours. I feel sad. I feel cold. I feel light. I feel weary. During your day, try to be mindful of how the pulse of what feels real shifts. Try to keep turning toward it. April 1st. Work of the Worm. What the worm eats feeds the root. The story is told by a member of the Ojibwe tribe that the Great Spirit had trouble keeping the world together when a little worm said he could help. Knowing that the secret of life lived in everything, the Great Spirit welcomed the little worm's help. So the Great Spirit said, "Help me, little worm," and the little worm slowly spun its barely seeable silk, connecting all of creation with a delicate web. The Great Spirit smiled, and its smile cast a light across the earth, making the web of connection briefly visible. The Great Spirit marveled at the little worm's industrious gift. For the worm wasn't clever or brilliant, but simply devoted to being and doing what it was put here to do, to inch through the earth, spinning from its guts a fine thread that holds everything together. And so the Great Spirit said to the little worm, "You have saved us, little worm, not by being great or bold, but by staying true to your own nature. I will let you live forever." Well, the little worm was stunned and somewhat frightened. The Great Spirit saw this and said, "Don't you want to live forever?" The little worm inched closer. "Oh, Father, the earth is big enough to cross. I fear so many years if I can't grow." The Great Spirit smiled again at the wisdom of one of its smallest creatures. "Very well, little worm, I will only let you grow into forever. I will give you the ability to spin this precious thread that connects everything around yourself. When you can enclose yourself within that web and quiet your urge to inch and squirm away, you will emerge after a time with the thinnest of wings full of color. Then you will know the lightness of being that I know." The little worm bowed and began to search for a leaf on which to grow. And this is how the Great Spirit enabled the worm to spin a cocoon and from its quietude become a butterfly. The story tells us that everything in creation is connected and that what holds it all together comes from the humble work of living on earth. It tells us that the experience of eternity is possible if we immerse ourselves firsthand in the unseeable web of life. It tells us that if we still ourselves long enough within the web of all there is, we will eventually come to know the lightness of transformation. Humbly, like a little worm, it is in us to work our experience, our pain and frustration, our confusion and wonder, into threads of silk. And freely, it's in our realm of choice to first connect everything with our experience and then to make a cocoon of those connections. Finally, we can enter that cocoon of experiential connection the way a Native American sweats in his lodge, the way a yogi holds his third eye, the way a monk maintains his vow of silence, until we emerge wearing our deepest colors for everyone to see. Amazingly, the universe is held together by the unseeable threads of our own experience, and our reward for keeping the web of connection alive is that our spirit emerges through what is personal into the center of all being. And so, by being who we are suddenly enlivened, however briefly, into the web of all creation. No matter how important we imagine others to be, it is each of us who holds things together in our small, humble way of working through the days with all that we have. This is the quiet miracle of spinning connection from our very humanness. This humble practice that no one can stop is the work of the worm. For your meditation, when the chance presents itself, watch a loved one breathe in their sleep. Look upon them as you would a flower, with gratitude and wonder that they even exist. Watch quietly, and if you can, breathe in rhythm with their unconscious breath. Feel the air move between you both as you breathe, and know this human moment as a common silk that connects everything. April 2nd. We share the same river. The river's now in me. I was traveling in South Africa and felt very tender one morning, when my friend Kim came upon me as I was weeping. She asked if I was okay. I told her it was only the waters of life splashing up my shore. Later that day I found her near tears and checked in with her. This time she said, "The river's now in me." We looked into each other and realized that we all share the same river. It flows beneath us and through us, from one dry heart to the next. We share the same river. It makes the earth one living thing. The whole of life has a power to soften and open us against our will, to irrigate our spirits, and in those moments we discover that tears, the water from within, are a common blood, mysterious and clear. We may speak different languages and live very different lives, but when that deep water swells to the surface, it pulls us to each other. We share the same river, and where it enters, we lose our stubbornness, the way fists wear open when held under in the stream of love. For your meditation, if you can, sit and watch a stream or brook as you meditate on the life of feeling that joins us all. If you can't get to a stream or brook, meditate just the same while watching rain trickle down the street. Note how the same river touches everything and moves on. As you breathe, feel the life of everything swell through you. April 3rd. Talking fast. Live loud enough in your heart, and there is no need to speak. There was a time in my life during my years in college when I was so talkative that the waterfall of words kept others at a safe distance. Of course, in time, this cascade pushed others away. But what I didn't realize till much later was that I kept talking faster and louder to the world around me because I couldn't hear the world within me. Of course, the more noise I made, the less chance I had of having what was real enter me or rise from me. It became a damning cycle. So often we mistake the need to hear with the need to be heard. All that talk was a way of reaching out to others with my heart. Ultimately, it was all based on the fear that if I didn't throw my heart out there through endless words and gestures and questions, I would be left all alone. It's taken me many years to learn that the world comes flooding in if I can only keep myself open. It remains important to reach out and to express oneself, but underneath that is the need to be porous and real. Through the opened heart, the world comes rushing in the way oceans fill the smallest hole along the shore. It is the quietest sort of miracle. By simply being who we are, the world will come to fill us, to cleanse us, to baptize us, again and again. For your meditation, center yourself by breathing steadily. Bring into view one thing you are reaching for. As you exhale, reach without moving and let it open up your body. Bring into view one thing you are needing to express. As you inhale, feel without speaking and let it open up your heart. April 4th. Making amends. There is hurt and there is love. They roll us through the days like a turtle down a hill. All we can do when on our back is roll one more time and head for the sea. Stones loosened by storms cover paths, and uprooted trees break newly formed nests, and crisis after crisis throws us into each other. It's inevitable. Stay alive and you will be hurt, and you will also hurt others. Unintended hurt is as common as branches snapped in wind, but it's the unacknowledged hurt that becomes a wound. Just as our only recourse to falling down is getting up, our only recourse to hurting others is to acknowledge what we've done and clean up the mess. This is known as making amends, a simple yet enormous act of integrity that restores trust. And trust, after all, is the soil that holds the roots of humankind. Without it, life on earth begins to eat itself dry. What causes us to hurt each other? It's hard to say. But it seems that being human, we are subject to many ancient and powerful opposites found in life. Among those that impact us constantly are light and dark, yes and no, and especially fear and peace. For it's out of fear that we feel the need to isolate ourselves or to control others. And it's often in the act of elevating ourselves that we hurt one another, not to mention ourselves. When not afraid, when in a moment of peace we feel quite a different need, we feel a sudden requirement to connect and belong to other living things, and it is then, in the act of true embrace, that we love one another. Still, as no one in daily life is exempt from both sleeping and waking, no one can escape feeling both fear and peace, and so no one can escape being both hurtful and loving. But the world is kept whole by those who can overcome their fear however briefly. The blood of life itself is kept vital by those who can simply and bravely repair their separations time and time again. Even if our awareness of being hurtful comes years after delivering the hurt, the smallest word or gesture, owning what we've done, can reopen the heart. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind and heart an act of isolation or control that you invoked which hurt another. Breathe deeply and try to see the fear that prompted your need to isolate or control. Breathe slowly and in your heart, make amends. That is, own the fear that prompted you, the act of isolation or control that arose from it, and the hurt that resulted. Just for yourself, express your amends in a letter or a card addressed to the person you hurt. Enter your day and let your heart tell you whether to mail the amends or not. April 5th, The Courage of the Seed. All the buried seeds crack open in the dark the instant they surrender to a process they can't see. What a powerful lesson is the beginning of spring. All around us, everything small and buried surrenders to a process that none of the buried parts can see. And this innate surrender allows everything edible and fragrant to break ground into a life of light that we call spring. In nature, we are quietly given countless models of how to give ourselves over to what appears dark and hopeless, but which ultimately is an awakening that is beyond all imagining. This, moving through the dark into blossom, is the threshold to God. As a seed buried in the earth can't imagine itself as an orchid or hyacinth, neither can a heart packed with hurt imagine itself loved or at peace. The courage of the seed is that once cracking, it cracks all the way. This is a walking meditation. find and watch some buds barely breaking ground. Meditate on their unseen beginnings underground. Breathe slowly and let your breath draw whatever is budding in you to the surface of your life. April 6th. Questions put to the sick. 1. When was the last time you sang? A Native American medicine man. I was lying flat on a stretcher in a large hospital room after one of my surgeries. I'd just been wheeled in, rejoining four others all mending in the one open room. There was a deep silence as we looked at each other. There was only the slight breathing of machines and the clear drip of fluids and the hum of old radiators. Suddenly, an older man began to laugh, and without a word, our eyes bounced back and forth to each other, and one by one, we joined in what became a cascade of coughing laughter, interspersed with short moans. For with each laugh, our incisions and bed sores poked us sharply. But we laughed and hurt and laughed and hurt like a flock of broken birds dreaming of their next flight. That laughter was a raw and primal sort of song, an elemental way of giving voice to our suffering. It was remarkably healing. I learned a great truth from that unexpected chorus. I learned that even when we feel powerless, we can always give voice to our pain and hope, to the slim, ongoing fact of our being alive. We often underestimate the power of giving voice, but it is real and sustaining. It is the basis of all song. It is why prisoners break into song. It is why the blues are sung, even when no one is listening. It is at the heart of all hymns and mantras. And it works its healing, not so much by being heard, as by the fact in giving voice to what lives within, even through the softest whisper, we allow the world of spirit to soften our pain. In this way, the smallest moan is in itself a lullaby. In giving voice to what we feel, the darkest cry uttered with honesty can arrive as the holiest of songs. For your meditation, sit quietly and breathe slowly until you feel a catch in your breathing. Focus on the catch, for something is pressing there on your heart. Place your hand on your heart and inhale deeply. On the exhale, give voice to what is pressing, even if you don't know what it is. Even if all you express is the slightest sigh, it is the beginning of a song. April 7th. Being shaped by others. The whole world could praise Sung Young Tzu, and it wouldn't make him exert himself. The whole world could condemn him, and it wouldn't make him mope. He drew a clear line between the internal and the external. Chuang Tzu. These words were spoken by Chuang Tzu in the 4th century BC. I read them 25 years ago and taped them to my closet so I could be reminded not to let the opinions of others shape me. I have changed a great deal since then. What I do, where I live, who I am. Many things have come and gone. The closet to which Chuang Tzu's words were taped is holding someone else's clothes. But the words are in my heart, though I still struggle not to be shaped by what others think. This is at once the clearest of spiritual intents and yet the hardest to stay true to. How to stay open to what others feel and not to what they think. We can't live without being affected by others, but we are only real when we let truth and love shape us from within. Our want to be liked, our want to avoid conflict, our want to be understood, all these traits tease us away from taking the voice within seriously. Though the earth is touched by everything alive, it never stops turning around the fire at its center. And though we are touched by the stories of strangers and the far-off songs of birds lost in wind, we find our way by following the Spirit's voice at our center. Too much is lost in waiting for someone else to tell us that what moves us is real. For your meditation, as you breathe, feel the earth beneath you holding you up as it slowly turns about its center. Breathe deeply and feel how you are like the earth. Inhale cleanly and feel the many things that you hold up. Exhale cleanly and keep turning about your own center. April 8th, Center of the I. In keeping the center of the self empty, the miracle of life can enter and heal. It's not by chance that the dark center of the human eye, the pupil, is actually an empty hole through which the world becomes known to us. Likewise, in a spiritual sense, the self we inhabit is the empty center through which we see everything. It's revealing that such a threshold is called the pupil, for it is only when we are emptied of all noise and dreams of ego that we become truly teachable. Like the center of the eye we look through, both the Buddhist and Zen traditions speak of an unbreakable emptiness at the heart of all seeing, from which all living things emerge. The Hindu Upanishads tell us that in the center of the seed of the great Nayagradha tree, there is nothing, and out of that nothing, the great tree grows. We are then reminded that in our time on earth, we grow like this tree out of that nothing. As the essence of the tree is the empty center of its seed, so the essence of our life is the intangible presence at the center of our soul. Therefore, our chief work as human beings rests in the sincere effort to allow that central presence to inform us. Thus, all forms of prayer and meditation are aimed at keeping the center of the self empty, so the miracle of life in its grace and immensity can enter and heal us. For your meditation, close your eyes and erase the many thoughts and images that arise one after another, as if your mind is a blackboard and your breath is a sponge wiping each appearance clean. Do this until you experience a slowing down of messages. Then open your eyes as if waking for the very first time. Keep breathing slowly and take in the first thing you see. Feel what is before you. See and feel the wood that makes up the chair next to you, and resist preempting its presence by pronouncing it a chair. April 9th, Living and Watching. How many ways can a statue dream of living? Every time I reach for you, we begin. We begin. The line between living and watching is very thin. A moment's rest or pause for reflection can spread into a thickness of hesitation, and the next thing we know, reaching out or saying something or picking up the phone or stopping in unannounced is difficult, as if there's suddenly some huge wall to climb just to be heard. This is how we isolate ourselves, digging moments of healthy solitude into holes in the yard. And of course, the dirt we dig and pile up becomes a small mountain that separates us from everyone we love. We all know how not phoning that friend because we were busy, if allowed to go too far, turns into a vastness that seems impossible to cross. The truth is that the phone is the same 6 inches from our hands as it has always been, The challenge is to remember this when everything seems so far away. To feel isolated is part of the human journey. But when we obey the feelings of hesitation and separation more powerfully than those of love, we start to experience numbness and depression. This is when we start to live like statues, believing that all we can do is watch. Hard as it feels, it is just at this moment that we must break back into living by reaching for anything, no matter how small or close. If it is fall, rub a leaf across your face. If winter, break a piece of ice. If spring, touch a small flower. For your meditation, surround yourself with small precious things, a stone, a feather, a shell. Center yourself and meditate on the space that exists between you and these small precious things. As you inhale, practice being a statue that comes alive with each breath. As you exhale, reach for the small precious things before you. April 10th, at home in our skin. The spiritual life is about becoming more at home in your own skin. Parker Palmer. Anything that removes what grows between our hearts and the day is spiritual. It might be the look of a loved one stirring their coffee as morning light surprises their groggy eyes. It might be the realization while watching a robin build its nest that you are only a temporary being in this world. It might be a fall on ice that reminds you of the humility of your limitations. As Parker Palmer suggests, the aim of all spiritual paths, no matter their origin or the rigors of their practice, is to help us live more fully in the lives we are given. In this way, whatever comes from a moment's grace that joins us to our lives and to each other, this is spiritual. For example, I was having coffee the other day in a cafe, and suddenly, from the rain of noise around me, there arose a word of truth in the exposed voice of a stranger whose face I couldn't even see. I don't know her context or her story or whom she was revealing herself to. I didn't even turn around to see her face, because in that moment there was a perfect beauty in our staying anonymous. I only felt, simply and deeply, that without her ever knowing, her moment of pointed and unexpected truth made me more at home in my own skin. The life of spirit is everywhere, in dust waiting for light, in music waiting to be heard, in the sensations of the day waiting to be felt. Being spiritual is much more useful and immediate than the books about books would have us think. For your meditation, center yourself and as you breathe, realize that your spirit fills your life the way your bones and blood fill your hand. As you breathe, realize that your life fits the world the way your warm and living hand fits a glove. As you breathe, feel your spirit fill your skin and feel your skin fit the world. April 11th, turning light into food. We might feed the dark thing in us that grows away from the light, until against all sense we mysteriously flower in the other direction. Quietly each spring, things in the plant world start growing slowly toward the light, while their roots finger their way underground. But once breaking surface, the most amazing thing happens again and again without a sound. The exposed thing growing toward the light stays alive by turning light into food. We've all learned about this. It's called photosynthesis, the process by which leaves turn sunlight into sugar, which feeds their roots. Then the roots, once nourished, make the stems and leaves grow further. The smallest plant life in spring reveals to us both the challenge of being a spirit in human form and the quiet courage necessary to grow inwardly. This is our deepest calling, how to turn light into food. How often we are told, you can't live on air, yet if we dare to make our way into the open, we are drawn into the air and the light, and the rest somehow happens. For like the nubs of shoots yet to break ground, we can't help it. Something in our very fiber knows where the light is, even when we can't see it. My most profound experience of this was in the midst of my worst despair after being diagnosed with a tumor pressing on my brain. Inexplicably, despite the fear and terror and sadness, despite doctors and technicians telling me the worst of what they imagined for me, though they really didn't know, somehow, though I was digging deeper in the dark like a stubborn root, some essential vein of being was, for all that, growing toward the light. And I am here to tell you, you can live on air. The light is our home. As a longer meditation, in early spring, choose one twig or stem and watch it grow. Follow its progress every other day. As you notice its changes, be aware of its complex relationship to both the light above and the dark below. As you watch this piece of life grow, imagine it as a mirror of something in you about to break ground. What is this small piece of greenery teaching you about yourself? April 12th, the need to speak. Just by speaking, I can break out of my self-made prison. June Singer. So many times we suppose ourselves out of existence, imagining that if we speak our heart, we will be rejected or ignored. I once watched a man reach to call a friend, excited to share a deep idea that had overcome him. But as the phone was ringing, I saw him imagine a cool reception, saw him try on the pain of not being heard, and quickly, with a sigh of deflation, he hung up before the fourth ring. Still, the expression, whether misunderstood, well received, or rejected, matters. For the cost of not making the call is that a piece of us dies. Consider how fish swim and birds fly. They do so because it is in their nature. For it is the swimming and the flying that makes them fish and birds. Likewise, it's the speaking of one's heart that makes a human being human. For even if no one hears us, it's the act of speaking that frees us by letting the spirit swim and fly through the world. For your meditation, sit quietly and allow yourself to be as still as lake water when there is no wind. Breathe slowly and look into yourself. Look to your bottom. Inhale deeply and feel whatever rises from your bottom. Exhale cleanly, and though you are alone, speak what you are feeling aloud to yourself. April 13th, a profound bow. All streams flow to the sea because it is lower than they are. Humility gives it its power. Lao Tzu. There's a yoga asana, a kneeling posture of exercise, whereby bringing your head to your chest while extending your arms up and out behind you, you can practice placing your head beneath your heart. And from this humbling position, you can't help but tire, and so you must put your arms down. With your head beneath your heart, you must stop doing. Soon after learning this, I came upon a woman who had been a nun, and she told me that she would practice for days upon days similar postures of Gregorian chant, incline, bow, and profound bow, each bringing the head lower and lower to the earth. This holds a powerful lesson. Time and time again, the head must be brought beneath the heart, or the ego swells. If you do not bend, life will bend you. In this way, humility is accepting that your head belongs beneath your heart, with your thinking subordinate to your feeling, with your will subordinate to the higher order. This acceptance is key to receiving grace. Lay your head down, and the world of being will open its joys. For your meditation, sit quietly on your knees, and as you breathe, incline forward. After a time, breathe deeply, and as you exhale evenly, bring your head below your heart while extending your arms behind you. After a time, bring your head, if you can, to touch the floor and offer thanks for being humbled. April 14th, Self-Confidence. It may have nothing to do with me, but if a friend or loved one is sad or angry, I can secretly wonder, what did I do? What can I do? Why didn't I do it all better to begin with? I'm often surprised and humbled by how quickly, in my insecurity, I can begin to assume responsibility for all the wrongs and sufferings I see around me. When thrown off center, when old patterns return, when feeling exhausted or depressed, I so quickly become the exaggerated cause of all that is not right with the world. I know I'm not alone in this. Perhaps it's one of the laws of emotional weather. Sudden lows result in isolated storms. It has happened to me enough over the years that I have to acknowledge the power of negative self-centeredness. We typically think of the ego-centered as being conceited and self-inflated and quite selfish. But this recurring struggle with exaggerated responsibility has made me realize that more often we are ego-centered when feeling deflated, when feeling shaken from our sense of oneness with things. In that place of separation, we become darkly self-centered, blaming ourselves for not fixing things or making things right, or for letting bad things happen. Underneath these self-recriminations is the grandiose assumption that we have the power in the first place to control events that are really beyond any human being's influence. Certainly we affect each other, and often, but to assume that other people's inner moods hinge on my presence is an egocentric way to keep myself in a cycle of sacrifice and guilt. Further, to assume that another's condition or way of being in the world hinges on my presence is the beginning of self-oppression and codependence. In extreme moments of negative self-centeredness, we can even assume magical proportions of burden in which we feel acutely responsible for a loved one's illness or misfortune because we weren't good enough or there enough or perfect enough. It's helpful to note here psychologist Michael Mahoney's definition of self-confidence. He traces confidence to the Latin confidere, fidelity, and understand self-confidence as a fidelity to the self. Indeed, it's only a devotion to that sacred bottom beneath our moods of insecurity that brings us back in accord with the center of the heart, which shares the same living center with all beings. This is what the Hindu tradition calls Atman, the shared immortal self. So now when I trip into moments of low esteem and feel certain that I am the cause of all this bad weather, I try to feel the pace of the earth turning beneath my feet and the pace of the clouds drifting over my head and the pace of my heart opening after a lifetime of pain. When these align, I am weakened of my ordinary will and awakened into a power greater than any one heart, greater than the weather of any one day or the mood of any one life. For your meditation, sit quietly and become centered. Now bring to mind the last time you felt a loved one's mood sink in your presence. Try not to deflect the discomfort you felt. Try to let go of all your self-questioning. Try to breathe through to the calm you felt before bringing this to mind. Breathe deeply and bring to mind the depth of heart you see in this person that makes you love them. Try to feel the love that lives beneath all moods. April 15th. The next step to health. The deeper the cry, the more clear the choice. I have a friend who has called into question whom he should love. This opened a field of complexities, and life quickly became an endless consideration of possibilities and allegiances. But beneath the endless inventories, his soul was calling out from way inside, and through his pain, my friend kept hearing this far-off cry surface at the oddest times. Soon he realized this cry was, indeed, much deeper than who. His very soul was begging to feel. This seemed more serious, more urgent, more filled with terror than a choice between one woman and another. As he began to struggle with facing himself, my friend began to realize that all the decisions to be made about who and where and when were really heartfelt distractions from a deeper cry. Underneath all the painful ambiguities and assessments, his very soul was drowning, sinking out of reach of the feel of life. Once hearing the deeper cry within himself, his choice became extremely basic and very straightforward. How do I regain my wonder at being alive? What must I do to keep my heart from sinking? Time and again, we are shown by the quiet courage of others that if we can let the deeper cry through, the next step to health will come plainly into view. For your meditation, center yourself and bring to mind a complex decision that needs to be made. Breathe slowly and try to relax your spirit beneath the decision to be made. Breathe cleanly and try to let the deeper cry through. Feel your basic life position way inside and admit, that is, accept and let in, what you need to be well. April 16th. One drop of truth at a time. It is the fullness of our attention to whatever is near that has birds fly out of God's mouth. The months relax, and the ice enclosing a bent-over branch thaws, and the snow drops, and the branch springs back up after its death-like sleep. The tree coming into spring teaches us how to let go into renewal, for this is how the freeze around a broken heart thaws. In another part of the world, small brilliant fish mouth pebbles along the ocean sand, sucking off bits of food and spitting back the rest. This is how they comb the bottom, and these small limbless creatures teach us how to suffer and move on, how to sift through what is nourishing, and how to give back the rest. And high in the mountains, away from the eyes of others, a small cave with its singular drip collects clear water that is the heartbeat of the mountain. So the center of the earth itself shows us how to be, one drop of clearness at a time, collecting in the moist center that keeps the soul alive. These are just a few examples of an essential relatedness that exists between all things. and practice if we look closely with our whole being at anything, plants, trees, the human heart, emptiness, fish, even the worn gears of a watch, the same core of deep instruction will rise before us in a language that waits beneath words. The world, it seems, both natural and constructed, is an endless net of particular lessons, each made of the same compelling thread that is always hiding in the open, simply waiting for our complete attention to reveal itself. By pulling at these threads, I have discovered again and again the deep and common way of things that is embedded in everything. So when confusion or pain seems to tighten what's possible, when sadness or frustration shrinks your sense of well-being, when worry or fear agitates the peace right out of you, try lending your attention to the nearest thing. Try watching how the dust lifts and resettles when you blow on it. Watch how the paw prints of your neighbor's retriever, if stared at long enough, turn into unexpected symbols. Watch how the one shell you brought back 3 years ago from the sea reveals itself at last as a face that is telling you how to continue. Give your full attention over to the nearest patch of life, to how an apple peels and juices. And after a while, each thing attended will reveal yet another way back to the center. This is a walking meditation. Center yourself and breathe deeply as you slowly step into the world nearby. Once centered, look around and focus on one thing that seems to have the rhythm of what you are feeling. It might be the slight sway of a bush or the tumble of a cup blowing down the street. Breathe slowly and give your full attention to the small outer rhythm that is matching your mood. Breathe and watch until the rhythm you are seeing and the rhythm you are feeling reveal their common truth. April 17th. A wisdom moment of trust. If you can't cross over alive, how can you cross when you're dead? Kabir. The need to step into what we fear and in so doing disperse its hold on us is powerfully brought to life by a moment in the film Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. After searching everywhere within reason and memory for the Holy Grail, Jones stands on an enormous precipice, a deep chasm before him, the Grail waiting on the other side. His father, wounded and depending on the Grail to heal, cries out possible interpretations of clues Jones has been given to reach the Grail. After what seems a lifetime of inner debate and escalating fear, he dares, against everything he knows, to step into the void above the chasm, and as he does, an enormous stone foundation appears beneath his feet, a bridge that was there all along. This is a moment of risk and trust, a wisdom moment that repeats itself in our lives in both small and large ways. Over and over, the cup we need to drink from, the ancient ever-healing cup of wholeness, waits beyond some deep chasm we are afraid to cross. Often we're driven to the edge by cries and clues of elders and loved ones, only to find that nothing makes sense, that there seems nowhere to go. And then the atom of risk begins to replay itself in those brought to the edge. Then, when all known ways of seeing have failed, we sometimes dare to step into the void. Whether that void is a chasm of purpose, or self-esteem, or a ravine in a relationship, or a canyon of addiction, this crazy wisdom step that begins with risk and lands in trust reveals a foundation that was there all along, but which is only made visible by our risk to think and see in new ways, and our trust to step into what we fear.